on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The ground is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. Your neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
Listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of Cosmic Catastrophe on Revolution.radio, where information never sleeps. I'm your host, Diamond, from the Oppenheimer Ranch Project, and joining us is my lovely partner and co-host, Leah Shaper.
Hello.
That's not Sharper.
No, it's not Sharper. I got a new one yesterday, Shater.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a new one I've never heard before.
We've got a great show today. We're going to be covering live the geomagnetic storm, G5 extreme storm, kick back up, KP9, and we're going to be discussing some of the things and how we look at the sun, some of the telemetry, and be able to make a prediction of how long this may last. And we're also going to compare it to all other equivalent geomagnetic storms going back into history, some of the human health effects. And amazingly, it's been going on now for like 12, 16 hours or more. I'd have to look at the chart to get the exact time frame, but very few infrastructure troubles, and there's good reason for that. This is the second G5 geomagnetic storm warning since the 2003 Halloween storm, but based on the data, it did not reach the strength of that storm, so it's a little weaker than the Halloween storm, extremely weaker than the Quebec event that caused a power outage, and we'll get to all those specifics. Because what we can show you is how strong the storm has to be when the grid begins to fail.
Right, which is going to depend on a bunch of different things, right? It's going to be the size of the solar flare, the strength of our magnetosphere, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
So I never realized that that Halloween storm was due to such a strong solar flare. X45? And
yeah.
It was Earth-facing.
Yep.
And we're still here. So, I mean, we'll get there, but that gives you some perspective.
Let's share the screen. Can you see it?
I can. Yeah, I was just about to go back and count the hours here.
24 hours now.
Wow.
24 hours straight. We've been in, well, we began in G4, extreme geomagnetic storm. And then for the last 20 hours, we have now been in G5, extreme geomagnetic storm. And for 9 of those hours, we've been at KP9. Now, we are about to experience a thunderstorm moving through here. It's going to peak at 12:30 in 25 minutes, so it might get really loud here.
It started raining pretty hard here about 10 minutes ago, but it seems to have petered out a little.
If you can hear any background noise. So this is not really a record-breaking event, but it's one of the strongest solar storms in 21 years.
Yeah.
That's the fact.
Yeah.
And if you look around, there may be some minor power outages here and there, but overall, the infrastructure has held up.
Which is
also, the charts on satellite charging are showing a huge total dose event for the last 24 hours, but there is no catastrophic surface charging or internal charging on any of the latitudes that I can pick up.
Amazing.
Yeah. So the warning from this morning is G5 geomagnetic storm persists. And I've been covering this ad nauseum over and over again, night after night now. What the effects possibly could be. The effects in G5 are widespread voltage control problems and protective system problems can occur. Some grid system failures may experience complete collapse or blackouts. Transformers may experience damage. We haven't really seen that yet.
Yeah.
Good news.
Yeah.
Spacecraft may experience extensive surface charging, problems with orientation, uplink, downlink, and tracking satellites. There have been issues with uplink, downlink. Some gamers had problems all day yesterday. Some problems with wireless companies and some cell phone stuff. But we see that with even lesser geomagnetic storms.
Yeah, yeah. And I sort of relate to you earlier today that I don't remember where I read this, but so for something like Starlink, right, these low Earth satellite orbits, and those satellites will fall out of the sky when they fail, and they're designed to fail in about, what did we say, 5 years?
Yeah.
And so one of the challenges for those satellites in this situation is that in their orbit, there's an increased amount of drag, I guess, basically from the extra particles. And that drag can cause the satellites to fail and start falling out of orbit. So we might see that, but it might not be for a few days.
Yeah. So there'll be increased drag. Definitely. That doesn't, those charts, internal and external charging, don't show the drag.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So here we see a shot of Aurora, which this is a super storm, a super geomagnetic storm. It doesn't get any higher than this. You're going to see auroras all the way down towards the equator. It was much weaker than the Carrington event, which actually lit up the equator for days.
Mm-hmm.
But I did find accounts all the way down to Sinaloa, Mexico.
Wow. Cool.
And Ransom just sent me a bunch of pictures. He's in Alamogordo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had
got good
aurora.
Picks last yesterday.
Excuse me?
They got good pics yesterday.
Yes.
Nice. Is that photo from like what, North Carolina?
This is Maine, lighthouse.
Okay.
So as you get closer to the equator, you're going to get better aurora. The aurora shots in the low latitudes are boring. It's just usually a glowing blue or glowing red sky, sometimes with pillars. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get those wavy green ropes. You've got to be way up near the Arctic to see anything like that.
Yeah. But if you were in Europe, you could see that bright pink sky.
That was crazy. And Tasmania, and it's the whole world, guys. It's not just the Northern Hemisphere here.
Yeah.
The Southern Hemisphere lit up as well.
Yeah. So. I'm so bummed that it was cloudy here last night.
I actually could see the aurora last night behind the clouds. If you looked over the ridge, it was glowing light blue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't go outside. Shit.
It wasn't like life changing, so I didn't really come get you. And so there was aurora all over the place. Here are shots closer to the equator. This is probably what Top Knot saw. This is Michigan, where you get some of the purples up there, especially during an intense storm. South Carolina shots here. And for those listening on the radio, I know you can't see this. But you can rewatch it.
You can find us tonight on Magnetic Reversal News at 8 p.m. Mountain Time.
Shots. Wow. So there was aurora worldwide all the way down to Sinaloa, Mexico.
Beautiful.
Look at that.
Gorgeous.
So that is very far south. And here we can see some of the Southern Hemisphere auroras. They were more pink and orange. They're different.
I'll have to ask my sister because she's in Australia, see what she saw.
Okay, so this geomagnetic storm is ongoing. The forecast is it will continue for several, maybe days, because we're about to get to it and blow your mind if you rewatch this tonight, the WSA Enlil spiral. We've had multiple X-flares continue after the X-flares here, which kicked this off, and they are going to be arriving in regular fashion over the next few days.
Fun times.
The current aurora forecast shows a reduced aurora, but this may jump up any time when any of those other events hit. There's very little evidence that any of those have hit yet. The KP has really dropped now down to 7.2. This is real time. So if it continues to stay down in that range, we'll drop down into G4 in the next few hours.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I want to show you. And this is the updated WSA Enlil 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 CMEs. Jeez. And these are going to hit next. And they're going to hit any time now.
Oh, boy.
And if they hit as another triple cannibal, like, you know, see how this is showing them all cannibalize?
Yeah.
It's going to be another extreme shockwave.
Yeah.
And that will jump up the telemetry once again. Mm-hmm. Here we are looking at the proton flux. This would be where this radiation hazard warning that came out yesterday, this mm-hmm. would be for pilots up in the high latitudes near the near the Arctic or the mm-hmm. Antarctic. They mm-hmm. would be getting high doses of radiation if they were at high altitude.
Yeah.
So because of that X5 yesterday, we jump back up into a proton storm here. But it's not that high. It's not up into level 2 or 3. It looks minor, and the all telemetry is showing that's dropping off from that X flare.
Mm-hmm.
We've had more X flares
yep.
today, just recently.
Yep.
We had another X1.5 and another near X M88.
Yeah.
And so those also produce CMEs.
Yeah. I want to point out, too, that the X5.8, it annoys me. When you click through to that, the actual measurement is X5.89. So it's more like an X5.9, not 5.8. I don't know why it doesn't get rounded up.
And there's a large associated CME that is coming our way from that.
Yeah. Although apparently most of it is going to go off to the west, and there's a little bit that's going to come at Earth. So that may not be an enormous impact.
But there's several others that it may cannibalize as it,
right.
Because it is going to be moving faster than the others.
Yeah.
The Carrington event arrived in 16 hours.
Wow. Wow. Well, and we're doing what, like 800 kilometers a second right now for the solar wind?
Yeah, we're like going to get to all that. It's interesting. Just a moment ago, let me get over there. So the magnetometer is still off the charts, but it has come into range. And here we are over at the Discover Solar Wind page. You could see about 2 hours ago, we've now jumped up higher in plasma speed than any time during the storm. So this is going to keep KP high. It's jumping up towards
like almost 1,000 kilometers a second.
No, it's at 900 now.
Yeah, I know. But if you backtrack.
There was a spike, yes.
Yeah.
But it is now coming up, and the BZ, the phi angle has shifted here. If the BZ shifts, this could be another impact. That this could be the other X flares that we're waiting to arrive. They could be arriving now.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's get to the facts of the storm. There is a way that we measure these extreme geomagnetic storms, and it's in DST, which is real time disturbance in nanotesla. I know that means a lot of gobbledygook to people, but this is the actual real-time chart, and you can see how far down we dropped yesterday down here,
mm-hmm.
412, negative 412 nanotesla for this storm. What does that mean? Well, if we have a graph to compare it to, let's say going back to 1980 here, we got to 412 nanotesla, and if you see from the live graph, that is recovered quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's where we are right now, real-time. So if we get another blast of plasma density, this could drop down even further than 412.
Sure.
But it doesn't appear to, because it's recovering so well.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to the comparison. The November 2003 storm went to minus 422 nanotesla, so a difference of 10 nanotesla.
Interesting.
And then the blackout storm of Quebec in 1989 went almost all the way to minus 600 nanotesla.
Wow.
And the Carrington event went further than minus 700 nanotesla, which is down off of this page.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are the comparisons. So yeah. I say, based on all this data, that if we get between 600 and 700 nanotesla, it's going to be grid fry time.
Right. Right. We're not there.
Because 600 is the minimum threshold, or 590 here. And it greater than 700 is Carrington, and that's definitely bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. NOAA apparently is reporting that this is the worst geomagnetic storm in 165 years, which clearly isn't true.
Absolute lie.
It's a total lie. And now Tim Pool is reporting on that because NOAA said it. And it's like, that's total
right,
BS.
Right, because Tim Pool just reports on headlines.
Well, right. No, he's not a science guy. And so that's not his bag. And so I don't fault him for that. But it's really unfortunate that NOAA is claiming that, because they are supposedly science. So,
well, NOAA has been perpetuating the global warming fraud for three decades. Why would anyone believe what they say?
Right. Right.
And the people
and yet
that watch,
we still rely on their data. You know, it's so frustrating.
The people that watch, we're using NOAA data right here.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Well, how is it that our major scientific institutions are just liars? I mean, NASA is a bunch of liars. NOAA are liars. It's just this world.
The good news is that people that want to know about the real data and science, they watch our show.
Yes. Yeah.
And anyone can clearly see here, I showed you the real-time charts of the DST, and I showed you where it went yesterday, 412 nanotesla. It's now recovered. It's all the way up almost at just minus 200. Well, a 50% recovery from the spike down. And it was very close to the 2003 event. So the headline should say that this is the biggest solar storm in 21 years.
Yep. It should, but it doesn't.
And the proton storm is not that severe. I hate to say his name, but Ben Davidson was going crazy yesterday saying that they have to ground all flights because people are going to get nuked. And it barely got into S2 storm for 5 minutes.
That's really frustrating. Fear-mongering.
To say the least. All right, I'm going to refresh this and see if we got a little pop. Nope. That was the pop. So it popped up to 900 kilometers per second. We'll recheck that as we go on here in the show. So for some comparison, the Carrington event, like I said, it reached us in 17.6 hours.
Yeah.
So you can kind of compare. We waited days for this event to come.
Mm-hmm.
So the Carrington event, just based on its speed, was significant. In the Wikipedia and in the Britannica explanation of Carrington, they don't assign an X value to it.
Mm-hmm.
But in other places they do, and X20 is a pretty good estimate.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had bigger flares.
Right, like we were and just talking about. The Halloween event was X45.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but again, it's going to depend on, well, and that flare was pretty well centered on the disk. In the southern hemisphere, but it's pretty well centered, so it would have been earth facing. This really goes to show that you have to consider all of the factors when you're trying to evaluate the potential impact on Earth.
Yeah, so the October 2003 Halloween storms are among the top few most intense storms of the space age. Aurora was visible as far south as Texas and in Europe, just like we saw in this storm. And mm-hmm. And the reason is because they were almost equivalent.
Yeah.
So this went to minus 422 nanotesla. The 2024 superstorm that we're still in went to minus 412 nanotesla yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that the Halloween storm was kicked off. The majority of it was because of the X45.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had other equivalent storms. There was another one in 2003 that went to minus 533 Nana Tesla. Mm. 2005. Go ahead.
Do we know if any of those produce CMEs?
Yeah, because the only way you could get this reading is at Earth when a when the storm hits.
Yeah, okay. Right, of course.
We've got the St. Patrick's Day storm of 2015. We've got the September 2017 geomagnetic storm, which was triggered by an X8.2, larger than any X flares in this sequence of events.
Yeah.
So those listening, what you should glean based on what the headlines over the last several days is that we're living in a world of disinformation. And they're pushing fear. There's no other reason to be doing what they're doing except to be scaring you to death into compliance.
I mean, that's not to say that we could not have, you know, some kind of kill shot X flare that takes out major parts of the grid. That could absolutely happen. It's just not happening right now, and you can't claim that this is the worst geomagnetic storm in 163 years or whatever year it is that they're saying.
Because it isn't.
Right.
They've already got this solar superstorm up here.
Yeah.
Pretty fascinating.
Well, so okay, like, so what do you think the difference is between, let's say, that 2003 X45 and what we're experiencing now?
Two totally different scenarios. We're experiencing a long sequence of X flares joining up together, cannibalizing each other, and that was more of a singular event.
Yeah.
Now you have to get lucky on these events. In the type of storm we're experiencing now, there is no way to determine what the magnetic field in each blast is. And oftentimes when these CMEs, even X-flare CMEs, cannibalize, they could cancel themselves out and not have the effect you think they're going to have.
Yeah.
That often happens. So solar science is so new and difficult. You really have got to be just watching the sun and understanding what's going on, because I think the X45 is way different than this because – And I think long duration, multiple X flare events are the biggest danger to our grid. Because if you stay up in G5, there's extreme heating of pipelines. And I have video of people that were filming audio last night of high transmission lines in South Dakota that were literally singing like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
that makes a lot of sense, too, because I mean.
Yeah.
It seems that we as humans react to in the same way as those transmission lines, right?
I'm like, still charged up.
Right. You know, that's the question
like
I have on Twitter. Like, are you
up
charged up from this? Because I certainly have been for days.
And so there have been much bigger events that could be as big as the Carrington event, but they didn't do anything. 1921, among the most extreme known geomagnetic storms. And so... What was Noah claiming? That this is the biggest in 100 and how many years?
165 years.
All right. Well, this is only 103 years ago, and it's the most extreme geomagnetic storm. Like, what? Yeah. Did they forget about that one?
Right. Right.
It was minus 907 nanotesla.
Wow.
That is -300 nanotesla greater than the Quebec event. If that happened today, we would have grid fry.
Yeah.
So what happened in 1921?
We don't know. I mean, we don't know at this moment anyway. We're going to have to look
that
up. There
was aurora documented everywhere. It burned out fuses, electrical apparatus, telephone stations, caused fires at signal towers and telegraph stations, total communications blackout for several hours.
It's like, why are we not talking about this event regularly, right? Like, if whenever we talk about the Carrington event, we should also talk about this event. Because,
Carrington,
you know, we don't
Carrington
know.
Carrington Light.
What?
It's like Carrington Light.
Yeah. You know, we don't know what the full effects of the exact circumstances of the Carrington event would be in a modern, in modern day with all of the infrastructure that we have. This 1921 event obviously gives us more perspective on what that might have been like.
Right. And so this event only got to minus 412 nanotesla, barely halfway to a blackout.
I thought you said it was minus 907.
I'm saying the event we're in now is only minus 412.
Oh. Yeah, yes.
In order to get to a blackout, you would have to have a double that event.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're just trying to put this in perspective on what we would then know is going to cause blackout in the future.
Yeah.
Yes. So we would need at least a single large X 40 or something Earth facing, or a multiple X 5 to X 10s, I think, to get that low.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good perspective.
Yeah. No, it is really helpful.
Didn't come anywhere near that.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the problem with reporting on events like this is it's partially, as you stated earlier, that, you know, solar science really kind of in many respects is in its infancy, and like putting all of these variables together into a picture is a little bit difficult to do. So it's pretty easy to generalize about what the effects might be and hypothesize, let's say just based on the size of the solar flare, but obviously there's a lot of other factors to consider.
And events that go as far as negative 900 nanotesla appear to be happening every regularly, 80 to 100 years.
Right.
So the next one is coming soon.
Right.
That's the bad news.
Yeah.
Back in 1582, there was a prolonged severe geomagnetic storm that produced aurora down to where we just had it now.
Yeah.
Another intense event in 1730, and then the Carrington event in 1859. So this is a regular occurrence. The storm we had now is not as significant as any of the big ones we just talked about. So there's at least three to five bigger events than the Halloween event or even the 1989 event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is far from the largest anything.
Yeah. I was thinking, what is the purpose of, let's say, NOAA making such a statement that it's the largest solar event in 165 years? And you sort of said it earlier, like obviously part of the intent is to scare people, because there's been quite a lot of that in numerous departments in the last few years, right? Trying to scare people. And I think it's just like an opportunity to destabilize the psychology of the population. But the irony is by making this claim in this situation, they're also basically unpreparing people, right? Because people will read that headline and they'll go, oh, gosh, something terrible is going to happen. And then it doesn't happen. And then they're like, oh, well, I'm not going to listen to that anymore. When in reality, like you just said a minute ago, we could easily be facing a much more major event that's going to affect our infrastructure heavily.
Exactly.
Back
in 1940 in March, an X-35 kicked off a geomagnetic storm. And the world didn't light it on fire. So we need a severe event, and it is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not waiting for a sequence of X-1s and 2s. That's not a kill shot. It's not it didn't even affect the internet.
Yeah. Which is... somewhat surprising, you know?
Well, it's still ongoing. So if it lasts another day, I think there's going to be some grid problems. There's going to be some things that explode.
I mean, Solar Ham is still showing us at about KP 8.5.
Yeah, and I can go back to real-time aurora, if I can find it. Jesus, I have so many. And see if I can...
I agree with you. That the length of time that this goes on, I think there's a lot more opportunity for damage because of the duration.
Yeah. And so we're still staying up at 900 kilometers per second. So we're not downplaying this event. There are dangers to to KP9 G5 geomagnetic storm. There are human health risks.
Yes.
There's those infrastructure risks. There's risks to satellites. And all that is still ongoing. So let's take a look here. This is from spaceweather.gov. Blackouts or complete collapse of power grids, possible nav systems out for days or hours. And aurora seen in Florida, which we already saw.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the three has happened.
Yeah.
If we jump over to the human health risks, can you hear this extremely loud rain?
I can hear the rain, but it's not overwhelming your voice. Not yet, anyway.
All right. Heart rate fluctuations, heart attacks, strokes of all kinds, acute coronary syndrome, blood pressure, increased seizure, migraine risk, anxiety, stress, emotional instability, cognitive diminution, suicide risk, mental disorder flare-up, radiation risk if you're flying near the polar regions. There's also alerts for diabetic patients and those with metabolic disorders. And like I said, for airline passengers in high latitudes, you should not be flying today. I warned everyone 2 days ago, if you have a flight on Saturday, cancel it.
Yeah.
And I nailed that one.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be up in the air right now.
Can you talk for a bit? It's so loud.
Oh, dear. Well, so there's also there's some interesting studies that have been done about the effects of solar flares, geomagnetic activity, also galactic cosmic rays on human health, which are pretty interesting. I think, I don't know if you have it, Diamond, but there's this one. Well, I'm sorry, that's not what I was thinking of. But there's an interesting paper from 2022. There's a researcher named Carolina Zilli Vieira, I think her name is, and she works with some other researchers too, kind of doing some...
It's right here.
Huh?
I just pulled the paper up.
Oh, okay, great. There's this one that talks about how geomagnetic solar storms can reduce the amount of heart rate variability, which is basically an indication of your ability to, let's say, like, have to run or something like that. So you actually want increased heart rate variability. And so that's kind of a interesting paper. Although I noticed that there's some discrepancies in one summary that I read versus another. I didn't really get a chance to go through this heavily, but it's pretty interesting. So we'll link this in the description box so you can peruse on your own. This is not a paper that you can look at the entire paper, but there's a pretty good summary that's provided. And then there's another paper talking about the name of the paper, same researcher, associations between solar and geomagnetic activity and cognitive function in the normative aging study. And so they did this study, I think, over a period of time, and it's based on the same data set that the other paper we just showed occurred. And you know, they're also reviewing other studies and the ways that our bodies can be affected. So, for example, solar and geomagnetic activity can affect our circadian rhythms and our production of melatonin. It can affect the autonomic nervous system, which is going to control your heart. This is so interesting. There's apparently... And
it
I didn't
also
look
can at, make you smarter for some.
Yeah, I'm gonna get there.
Okay, it's clear though from our comments in the last 2 days that there are either groups negatively affected or groups that are positively affected. It's amazing.
That is definitely something that I'm noticing is that the effect on individuals is very individual. The way that we are impacted by these events varies a lot from person to person. This is fascinating. There's apparently some animal studies that show that galactic cosmic rays, which is not what we're dealing with right now, but galactic cosmic rays can activate the brain's immune cells. So it can actually cause inflammation in the brain, which isn't inherently a bad thing. It's part of the protection mechanism for the brain. But if you have inflammation in the brain over a long period of time, that can potentially cause cognitive problems, dementia, etc. So that's pretty interesting. There's another study showing that where is this? I can't find it right now, but that even in prenatal humans, high solar activity can affect them and their cognitive function. We've talked about how there's some studies correlating people who were born during solar minimum have longer lifespans, which is interesting.
Yeah, and we've also had friends in the community negatively affected, having strokes during the last major solar storm that got to KP 8 and 9.
Yeah.
Dave Talbot was affected.
Yes. Yeah.
And who wrote Cold Winter? Cold Sun. Dark Winter.
I can't remember.
Oh, he also...
Maybe it'll come to us.
He also had a stroke during a geomagnetic storm.
Right, and apparently men in particular are rather susceptible to atrial fibrillation during events like this. I think that came out of these studies,
too. At the beginning of the show, I predicted a storm here at 12:30, and it started exactly at 12:30. I just wanted to make that...
Okay. I mean, there's also, like, you know, plenty of evidence that high solar activity can cause anxiety in people. And I will say that I experienced that quite intensely over the last, like, 4 or 5 days. I basically didn't sleep for like 4 or 5 days. And what I find so interesting is that I was concerned about my sleep last night because we just had that X5.9.
Yeah.
I finally got a really good night's sleep, and it correlates with the geomagnetic storm. Like KP4-5 is sort of like normal, right? 3-4-5. And I find that I feel terrible usually when we're in that range. If we're below that range, KP0-2, I feel pretty good. And then I've also found that sometimes I feel really good during extreme geomagnetic storm events. Like, that's bizarre.
Yeah, some people are negatively affected because it can fluctuate your heart rate, your blood pressure, and like you said, circadian rhythm.
Yes, yes. Well, so that struck me, too, when I read that today, because I think, I don't know if it's specifically solar activity or geomagnetic activity affecting the pineal gland, which is it the pineal or the pituitary? I think it's the pineal gland that's responsible for melatonin production. So it kind of struck me, just based on my own experience in the last couple of days, that it's almost as if like one cancels out the effect of the other on the pineal gland. I mean, I'm certainly a bit of an alien, so I can't be an indication of any general phenomena. And also, like we just said, lots of people are affected in lots of different ways by this. So I don't know that we can ever fully grasp a general trend in the effects on people.
Yeah, and this is not over. We still have quite a bit to go and lots more CMEs on the way over the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
So we could see some infrastructure problems develop because of the length of this storm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But based on the fact that it's not as strong as storms where infrastructure problems occur, I find that probably highly unlikely unless the incoming plasma pushes us beyond -412 nanotesla.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's the only way we get any grid problems.
Yeah. Something else I want to say regarding the impact on humans that I find really interesting. And I asked this question on Twitter yesterday about feeling charged up for a reason. I was really curious to know what people were experiencing, because when I say charged up, I mean, like, you know, there's a physical component, I think. Like, I've experienced a lot of, like, scalp tingling and stuff like that. You said you were feeling some of that stuff, too, right?
It's like kundalini. It goes down from your scalp to your spine.
Yeah, yeah. And I've had experiences like that before, but typically when I was having, like, some kind of, I'll just generally call it, like, a psychic experience or whatever. So I thought that was interesting. But, you know, I also said, do you feel charged up emotionally, intellectually, mentally, physically, psychically? Because there seems to be a range of ways of feeling charged up. But, like, I noticed for myself that I'm just downloading tons of information, like as if the information is really in the particles in the universe, which is something that I truly believe. But it's fascinating because it's like thinking about the particles in the universe that are like streaming towards us, towards our planet, and then like through our bodies. And like it's like we're literally ingesting all of that.
Yeah,
so fascinating to me.
And here on the human health chart, on the right side, solar flare risk, many people don't know that there are multiple phases to what happens when, let's say, a large X flare occurs. Within minutes there is energy from that X flare that reaches Earth at relativistic speeds, at the speed of almost light. Yeah. And that is what triggers the radio blackouts. So mm-hmm. when we have these X flares, minutes later, we get R3 radio blackouts. That's the energy that hit us from that flare. And it's going through everything, all biology on Earth.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of people, it says right here, flare-ups and migraines, digestive disorders, skin conditions. Uh-huh. It's almost like an allergic reaction to the energy.
Right.
Including those related to STDs, visual impairment, reaction time diminution, emotional instability.
On the emotional instability front, I mean, there's a correlation between like strong solar flares and social unrest, for example.
Yes.
And I was listening to very briefly. I was listening to this guru guy this morning, and he basically
just a note for the social unrest and the solar activity. The last major social unrest, the Occupy movement, was at the solar max of cycle 24.
Well, I would argue we've had more social unrest since then, like all of the BLM and the social justice warriors and all of that stuff.
That was manufactured.
Well, that's true. That's a very good point. And also, you know, we've been feeding the population with all of this fear porn on a variety of fronts, right? On the front of racism, on the front of the pandemic or the plandemic, I should say, all of that stuff. So people are already really emotionally charged up and kind of whacked out and out of touch with reality. And then you throw in, like, I would not be surprised in the next few days to see some major, maybe riots, protests, we'll see. But this guru guy was talking about, just generally speaking, his take was that whatever your state, your emotional state, it will be amplified. So if you are, you know, gentle and calm and whatever, and this solar flare comes in, you're just going to be more like that. If you are emotionally unstable, you're going to be way more emotionally unstable. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know if that's true, but
with half the population emotionally unstable, what could go wrong?
Right.
All right. So this solar storm is going to continue for at least another day or so. It really hasn't waned. It's just reverberated between KP 8 and 9.
Yeah. Yep.
And yeah, but the longer it lasts, not only is there more risk to infrastructure, but there's more risk to humans that are affected by this.
Yeah. And apparently there's more risk to humans from other humans as well.
Yeah. So I wonder how it's going to play out. We're going to just check out all the telemetry here.
Mm-hmm.
No significant changes. The aurora prediction is waning. It's nothing like the other night. So the only way we'll get something like last night is if we get hit with another significant plasma front.
Well, which is certainly coming. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's just a matter of time.
I just thought it was going to happen on the show.
What is the projected time on that Enlil spiral for the next CME to come in, or set of CMEs to come in?
It's on some charts, it's 24 hours or later after the initial front, which is now. That's what I said at the beginning of the show. We counted it. So it's now, anytime now.
Okay.
And so... This might be the bump, and that's it. So it wasn't significant. Remember that as time goes on, the later X flares, AR3664, kept facing further and further away from us.
Right. So we're just going to get less of that CME coming directly at us. Like I said earlier, that X5.9, it looks
that
like
that
could
be significant, even though it's glancing, and that would be the last event. So that might, that's still coming.
Yeah. Well, and there's still an X 1 point something right behind that, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we can just wait and see. What can we glean from what's happened so far? Everything held up well. No one died. The fearmongers were wrong.
Yeah. Well, and then it'll be interesting to see, too. I mean, six what is it? Suddenly forgetting the number of the spot. I just had it stuck in my head and I had forgotten it.
3664,
yeah, is about to go around the limb. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when it comes back around. Because that's really...
It is a Carrington-sized sunspot.
It's big. And it's not like... It doesn't, at least not right now, it doesn't seem to be like burning out or anything.
No, and we can look at the latest, actually. If I go to latest here, we can see it real time where it is. It should be much different than that, a little further around the limb.
Yeah.
It won't give me the latest. Of course, sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... In a few
TV
weeks,
has dropped a little bit, though. We're closer to 8 now.
Okay. In a few weeks, she'll be coming around the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't, it could be that we have kind of a repeat situation once it comes around the limb, but it would be for a longer period of time because this sunspot didn't really get super complex until it reached about the middle of the disc.
And this is showing on the 12th. On the 12th, UTC midnight would be minus 6 hours.
6 hours, yeah. So it's about 6 p.m. here for us.
So 6 p.m. So today. We're now 6 p.m. for the arrival of the next plasma front.
Yeah. Well, the start of it is earlier, though.
Yeah. I think that's just the model. They're guessing, and that's the highest probability, the peak.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that while these are all kind of cannibalized, they're not completely. So there's like a long stretch of time where these CMEs are coming in.
Especially at the end here, that the thickness you're talking.
Yes.
Yeah. And look at down here, the radial velocity lasts for a while, especially on the end event. The first event has lots of that white, which is the maximum, but the end event is even more white.
Yeah.
Could be interesting.
Yes. Yep.
All right, we got 13 minutes left in the show. We've covered this ad nauseum.
Yeah.
What could we glean from this event and from all the data that we've listened to? It's quite simple. Sometime in the near future, an event is going to occur that sends us back into the Stone Age. And the question is, are you prepared for that event?
Mm-hmm.
Last 2 days are a great dry run to get everyone up to speed on what's real and what's not real, what to actually be afraid of. And what you need to be afraid of is starving to death if an event like this happens in the near future.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would end commerce. Go ahead.
Because once the grid goes out, or even portions of it for a period of time, and we covered this with the 2015 paper from the... From the guy in the Navy, I'm spacing on his name now, talking about the impacts of any kind of solar event on our planet. Once that grid goes out and there's no power, commerce goes down because all of our transactions depend on that. Water systems go down just at the most basic level, right? Like even if you live in a city, I was just talking about this last week. We had a power outage last week here. Wasn't a big deal, maybe 6 hours or something. And it was in the middle of the night, so it didn't matter all that much. But, because we live in a rural area, we are dependent on electricity for everything, including just pumping water into our houses, right? So once the power goes out, it's like, you've got what's left in your pressure tank, and that's it as far as water goes, unless you have an electrical backup of some kind, a backup generator, solar panels, whatever. If you live in a city, which we did for many, many, many years, the power goes out and you get jaded about that stuff because you still have water, because as long as the water plant has electricity, you still have water because they're the ones who are pressurizing your water and pumping it to your house. Just losing that in and of itself, most people don't have stores of food in their house. A lot of people don't even have food for tomorrow in their house, much less next week. So it's like it behooves you to not only prepare for yourself, but also to prepare for all of the people who are going to be unprepared and are going to be looking for supplies.
Yeah, we've got long-term long-term food storage where you can support the channel at preparewiththeranch.com. It's My Patriot Supply, 25 to 30-year shelf life, and it'll give you a month, 3 months. But you can also be prepping yourself because you just don't want dry carb powder survival food. You can be storing cheap things like when canned goods go on sale for a buck a can, you pick up 10 cans, you can get some rice. I suggest that to stay healthy, you need to stay healthy. Get a green powder. It's the easiest thing you can do. It has all the micronutrients you need, cost about $20 a month, and you can stockpile some of that.
Something else you can stockpile that I didn't really occur to me till recently. You can get like big tubs of like organic grass-fed beef tallow. And the reason I say that is because beef tallow from grass-fed beef is loaded with nutrients. And once that tallow has been
rendered,
thank you. I wanted to say refined, which is basically what it is. Once the tallow has been rendered, meaning all of the impurities in any water that's in there has been taken out of the fat, it's shelf stable. So it lasts a really, really long time. You still have the option of freezing it if you want to, but that's like a really good thing to have around just for nutritional reasons.
And I've got bad news. You're also going to need potassium iodide if you're near a nuclear power plant.
Yes.
These nuclear power plants have backup generators for maybe 6 months. I don't know if they all actually do the correct safety checks to make sure they have that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But if there is a long-term power outage, if it's an extreme event, it's going to take out the grid for 1 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And these backup generators will fail, and we're going to have meltdowns at all of these nuclear facilities.
Yeah. That's a really scary proposition. Obviously, if you can get away from an area that has nuclear power plants for that reason, that's a good option. But nonetheless, I would still have potassium iodide around, which we do.
And you don't have to be that far, 100 miles, but you have to be downwind.
Yes, that's the big thing, is being downwind.
Yeah, and we've seen with huge meltdowns like Chernobyl that they're not as extreme as people claim.
Right, right.
If your house was next to Chernobyl, that's bad. But people 50 miles away really didn't get affected by the worst nuclear meltdown ever.
Right, right. I'll throw out there too, and I've said this before, but I highly recommend picking up a copy of Anita Bailey's book, Cold Times, because as far as figuring out what you should be prepping and how, I think that's a really excellent resource for all kinds of things that you may never have thought about before. And granted that is geared more towards grand solar minimum and, you know, a world with lower temperatures and affecting our infrastructure. But it's totally applicable to any other kind of grid down scenario as well, because that's also part of grand solar minimum.
Yeah. And I would also say the most important thing, which we didn't even cover yet, is you need water or you're dead.
Yeah.
So get yourself a big Berkey or a zero water pitcher or filter, because with these devices, you can take some of the most disgusting water and make it drinkable.
Right, which means that you can store a lot of water and filter it later, right? Like if you can put a cistern on your property, even if you're not like hooking it up to your house, just to have that as a supply of water in the event that you can't get water to your house due to lack of electricity, that's a good way to go.
And because of all the chemicals in 100% of rainwater, you need to filter this.
Yes. Yeah.
So get yourself a big Berkey. They're a few hundred bucks. Will save your life in a blackout.
Well, and then there's also some cool tutorials online about how to filter your own water using like carbon and sand. So those are other good options because it's really simple to do. You just need some basic supplies and you're good.
Yeah, make some charcoal, some buckets, and make it all flow through. Do it multiple times.
Yeah, yeah.
You also need a plan, a long-term plan. Your preps aren't going to cut it. Your prepper closet and that crap food, most of it, is going to keep you alive. But it's not going to keep you alive forever. You need variety. So you should be learning how to wildcraft, wild harvest, grow your own food so that you can have some fresh vegetables even if you live in an extreme climate and hoop houses, you could grow kale and all the brassica family. And this is what you're going to need to supplement to keep your health up and to prevent sickness.
Yeah. And even if you have a really short growing season, like we have a pretty short growing season here, it's only 85 days. If you can grow some of that food in that time period and grow more than you need, and then find ways to store that stuff, dehydrate things, freeze them, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I like to say now that like having preps, like having a closet of canned food or whatever is great, but it's only going to take you so far. And the way I think about it now is the point of having the preps is really just to buy you enough time to figure out how you're going to account for that need in the future. Like that's really the purpose, because you can't stock up everything that you'll ever need forever. It's just impossible.
Right. And the most important lesson as we go to the end of the show here is learn about hygiene. In events like this, in a grid down scenario, when we get kicked back into the Stone Age, the majority of the population doesn't know how to act. And the majority of the population dies off from hygiene issues, from getting their poop into their food.
Yeah, well, and people die of cholera and tuberculosis typically, right? It's like those bacteria are getting into the water supply because people are stupid and they're not pooping hygienically, and then it ends up in the water supply and then everybody gets sick. This happens after like, you know, every major, like the earthquake in Haiti, there were cholera outbreaks constantly. I think they still have cholera issues, you know, because the sanitation is not up to par. That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
So know how to poop in a hole in the ground.
Wash your hands and bury it deep, far away from family.
Exactly.
Well, we wish you all the best on the upcoming collapse of the empire. I hope you're all prepared. Reach out to revolution.radio and support the channel. They support free speech. We love each and every one of you. Final words, Leah Shaper.
Well, I'll say once again, find us again tonight on Magnetic Reversal News at 8 p.m. Mountain Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Eastern. That's wrong.
But it is a boom.
Boom.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction. Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday, 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Time, 2 hours of an organization to the madness, discussing the ever-changing dynamics of being both physically and mentally prepared for a plethora of possible outcomes to our future and present. a look into the latest technologies, new scientific discoveries, and